You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Ballot, the show where the conversation starts. This month, we are talking about the rest of the world region. We're diving back into the rest of the world region. And we are talking about Les Kellett, arguably one of the best comedy wrestlers of all time. Certainly a discussion we'll be having today because we're going to have the discussion of whether or not he should be in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. With me today to discuss the case for Les Kellett is Ethan Tyler. Ethan, a wrestling historian, I am very much appreciative for you coming on. So thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ryan. Thank you.
So like I ask with every single guest that comes onto the ballot first, I wanted to ask you, what is your relationship to Les Kellett, if you have one?
Ooh, I mean, it probably starts with my grandfather, who was a wrestling fan, believe it or not, dating back to the 1930s.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, he was a wrestling fan. He was born in Cyprus, and he knew Jim Londos. He knew the name, and I didn't have a clue about Jim Londos when he was telling me this, which is a problem, but he knew about Jim Londos, and he came here in late 62. And he would attend the wrestling shows all the time through the 60s to the mid 70s when the UK in the 60s was booming in terms of business, and still watched it afterwards. And he was the first guy who would tell me about all these old UK guys. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was a Puritan. He liked the real wrestlers with actual technical ability, but he would always mention that Kellett, who was a pure comedy wrestler, but he would always mention that he respected him because there was a skill to what he did. And you know, it's comedy, but it's not sort of lowbrow comedy. So that was really my first exposure to that name of, okay, this guy's a comedy guy, but my grandfather likes him, so he must be good at what he does.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that when we get more in depth with his wrestling ability conversation. But there is a reality to his wrestling style. Mm-hmm. Obviously still based in that catch-as-catch-can style, but, you know, like there's a reality. There's instead of the broader over-the-top American comedy style that obviously permeates still here in America.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you see comedy and wrestling, it's appealing to the lowest common denominator. If I'm trying to be nice here.
Blame you. No, I think you're right. I think you're right, and I think a big reason, obviously, is because Vince McMahon is the biggest pusher of the comedy part.
And also, you're trying to think of what will make most people laugh. And look, fart jokes are funny. I laugh at fart jokes, but it's lowbrow. You don't need talent to be able to do that kind of comedy. With Kellett, he's one of the guys I always recommend everyone watches at least once just to get an idea of what we're talking about in terms of his style. There is skill there. There is something about him. And it's not like no one else was able to replicate him. So, you know, there is that. I respect the art form. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot more about comedy wrestling as a style in this episode. But obviously, we're talking about Les Kellett here. Just give a little background on him. Born in England, obviously. Started wrestling, amateur wrestling at the very least, training under Len Pickard, age of 17. Became a Navy engineer. He toured on a boat around the globe, came back to England. He was both an engineer and a wrestler at the same time. That's where he started professional wrestling at the very least. World War II begins. He stops wrestling. He starts, I think, in the army for World War II. And then after that, he eventually meets back up with George de Rolowskow?
Rolowskow, yeah.
I always nail names. and was convinced to go back into wrestling, and then ever since, you know, for decades after that, stayed in wrestling, you know, touring around basically all of Europe. I saw as much as England, France, Ireland, and Belgium as a lot of some cards that I saw him on. And then he just, you know, like I said, wrestled for several decades after that. I saw that starting out, he worked more of the, like straight wrestling, regular wrestling style, based on some things I saw, and then slowly turned comedic. What's your take on that?
I think he's always leaned comedy, but he didn't have the act perfected yet. Because we have newspaper. Yeah, because his career spans essentially from the late 30s to the early 80s. I mean, he retires in early 1984. His debut was around 1938, somewhere there, with gaps, as you mentioned, because of the war and everything.
Yeah.
And we have newspaper evidence in the 40s when he was not only just a wrestler, but also he did some refereeing on the side and some behind the scenes stuff for Norman Morrell, who was one of the promoters in the north of England. He was doing comedy spots as a referee. So like, there were little things that I think he has always leaned in that direction. It just took him time to perfect the gimmick, to sort of create the gimmick as a whole, as we see it in the footage available, you know, in the early 70s. But he's always, I think, been a comedy wrestler with legitimate skill. Like, to be fair, I mean, I don't want to, on a personal level, he knew how to wrestle. Just to put it that way.
He had a great foundation. And then was able to build off of that, which I think is great. And also using a foundation as a referee, I was reading some wrestler magazines of his feud with McManus, and I think one of the match results ending with like him pushing the referee. I don't know if it was him pushing it, the referee getting pushed into McManus, knocking out McManus, and then Les Kellett jokingly saying, "I won." So using referees as a fun comedy spot is really great. So let's just talk about his wrestling ability. He's so funny. He's really, really great at it. Like we talked about, great foundation, obviously learning under Len Picker that way. Great foundation, but the way he uses comedy is very, very British. If you want to do like the modern comparison, I guess you could say it's like UK office to the US office in terms of like it is more... lateral thinking, more straight lace, way less broad, way less over the top. Obviously his wrestling style has a lot of that catch as catch can sort of I say this in a nice way, catch as catch can kind of looking sillier at times with the sort of like, I'm going to rotate an arm and then I'm going to pop back down and then pop back up. You know, any Johnny Saint footage you see. Using that as a base to then add comedy throughout, I think is really, really great. I know he does get some flack where it is, once you've seen Les Kellett once, you've seen him 1,000 times in terms of comedy. But, you know, of all the footage that is available, which we can mention in a moment, of all the footage that is available, it always seems to work with the crowd that is present for his matches. So what do you think about Les Kellett? What do you think about his wrestling style?
I mean, as a style, he's a pure comedy wrestler. And one of the things you'll notice if you watch, we've got about 10 matches of his, I think, available. Yeah. The fans are there specifically to laugh.
Yes.
They are there for the comedy. I do not get the impression they really care about the win losses, and I don't think they care.
The win losses didn't matter much for Kellett. As long as I know, he won a lot of matches.
Yeah, but you've got to keep in mind, he's only ever won, I think, one title, which I think was a brief run in 1952 when the gimmick wouldn't have been perfected. He was one of those guys who, gimmick is, you know, you don't need titles for a guy like this. He is who he is. He can draw as he is. I'm trying to think of like a modern, I mean, the historical example would be something like Antonino Rocca, who's just ridiculously charismatic, where the belt's unnecessary. He will be fine. Maybe The Rock, you can think of as where the charisma is so high and people are so entertained that even if he loses, and he lost plenty of times in his prime, it really never made a difference. And with Kellett, it's kind of the same thing. The win-loss is irrelevant as long as the fans are entertained by the act as they're seeing it, then they will be happy. And his comedy, it's the mannerisms, which are, you're correct, very British in terms of the mannerisms. But the key to, I think, what makes him so successful and so difficult to replicate, I think, is timing. There's little things that he does, right place, right time. The little drunken act that he does, right? If anyone who's seen his matches, he'll start stumbling around like a drunk person. Opponent runs into him, boom, he'll drop down to a knee. Opponent misses, crowd lock. Perfect timing. as he does it. His in-ring ability, again, look, you're going to have fans who are going to watch this stuff, which, and I do recommend everyone watches at least one of his matches just to get an idea of what we're talking about.
There'll be some matches posted in the link down below.
Yeah, I mean, his match again in 72 against Johnny Keslor, and there's a Bobby Barnes match, and Bobby was a, you know, main event level guy at the time in 73, and there's a series against Mel Stewart around 74, 75, which I think gives you exactly what you need to see from him. And look, he was still willing to take bumps. He wasn't lazy. I mean, he would still... All this footage that we're talking about is between 1972 to 75. He is aged 57 to 60 here.
Yes, yes.
And looks it. Okay, he's not one of those guys who aged, you know, he looks his age. Yes. But he's bumping around and he's doing everything. And the important thing is, physically, he may not be at his prime, but from a drawing perspective, he is at his prime. So you are seeing his ability when it was at its most successful, let's say, in terms of business. So when assessing his in-ring ability, it's going to come down to how each voter views comedy and pro wrestling. Some voters don't want comedy to have anything to do with pro wrestling whatsoever, and they're going to look at him, I think, and they're going to think he's an embarrassment, and, you know, it's a disgrace to the business, and, you know, they're going to be really, really negative on him. Other people are going to think he's a genius.
Yeah.
The way he does everything, they're going to be, oh my God, this guy's absolutely amazing, and he's got the crowd in the palm of his hands, and they're going to think he's like a Hall of Fame level tier worker. For me personally, I'm basically in the middle. I can't watch him and say this guy doesn't have any ability. I think that's ludicrous. I mean, he's clearly extremely, extremely talented at what he does. I think he's a really, really good wrestler, but the limitation is the act itself, as you said. For me, once you've seen a few Kellett matches, you've pretty much seen what you need to see. There's not going to be a lot of variation there. Mm-hmm. And there are limitations in terms of how you can work with him. I mean, you can talk to the British wrestlers are very notorious about it. When you're working with him, you're working his style. It's going to be his type of match. You know, the idea of just switching it up, it's not, you know, there's a limit, I think, to what you can really do with somebody like this. And, because of those limitations, calling him like a Hall of Fame level worker, I wouldn't be able to go that far.
And that's obviously a big like asterisk and tough thing for all of this is that like we're basing a lot of this off of late stage Kellett, right? In terms of his career, off of 10 matches that are available. All of them, I believe, are on YouTube. All 10. And you know, like I said, like there is not really much footage of the guy out there. At the very least, I like you said, all of it is in the 70s. None of it is in the 60s, where you're going to have obviously 10 years younger of the guy. So maybe he's going to be taking more bumps. You know, I don't recall anything massively different in terms of things I've read about his style or anything, but you know, whether or not how his style changed in 10 years as a guy that's gotten older and maybe wanting to take less bumps or doing more comedy. We don't know. We simply do not know because there is such a lack of footage out there.
Yes. I mean, you get some, there are some signs, for example, if you watch him in 72 against Johnny Keslor is the first match, I believe the earliest match, I should say, that we have on tape.
I believe.
And
so,
if you watch that and you watch some of the stuff later in 75, you'll notice he's not allowing himself to be snap mad, take the back bump and go into the outside anymore. He's not doing one of his famous spots, which is when he gets thrown to the outside, but at the last minute, he'll grab onto the bottom rope with his feet, stop himself from landing head first, come back. He's not doing that one anymore. There are little bumps that he stops doing in 75 because he's 60. And I think he realized it. Look.
And 60, and as far as I can tell, was doing it for decades doing that.
Yes.
Spot.
Yeah. I mean, his back was legitimately, Ken Walton, the commentator, will always mention that he had, I think, 3 surgeries on his back. And I have no reason to doubt that. And, you know, his back would have been messed up back then. But tough guy. So, I mean, he wouldn't have shown it. But the difference, I think, would have been, and you're right, that we're speculating here. We don't have footage. But I think the difference would have been that in his younger years, he would have been a little bit more willing to bump around to create the comedy, rather than allowing his opponent to not create the comedy for him, but it's more subtle the way he does it. I think it's actually better in the 70s because he can't bump as much, it's more difficult. Mm-hmm. And yet he still gets great reactions from the crowd.
Yeah.
But it's him being able to figure out, okay, I can't do as much, but with what I can do, how can I generate the best reaction? Again, like, you know, there is a genius to what he does. Like, there is real, I think, ability with this guy.
Yeah, and also in the same breath, I'm sort of taking a devil's advocate stance, it feels like. But in sort of that same breath, you know, you talk about, like, the crowd does not really care for the result of these matches. The crowd is really there to see it. It's almost like you're there to see Les Kellett. You're there to almost like see like a stand-up routine that has been toured for, I guess, decades. And like, you're there to like see the hits, see the jokes a lot of the times. I have to imagine, right? You know, you're there to see the hits. You want to see all these sort of things. I don't know how much his comedy style like evolved, you know, if he does different bumps, different bits, different jokes, you know, like, you know, oh, I did this. I toured around with this comedy spot. It got aired on TV. I'm not going to do that anymore. You know what I mean? But it's those sort of things of like, I think at that point in time, it's like you are there to see the jokes. And it works, and it still works, and that's great. That's the great thing I think about wrestling compared to stand-up comedy is like you can't really do stand-up comedy for the same joke for 20 years.
No, I mean, the famous example that we have of a wrestler where the fans are very much there to see that guy and they don't really care about the opponent, Gorgeous George, is your really, really famous example where there are plenty of matches of his that drew huge numbers. I mean, much better draw than Kellett, for the record, in case anybody thinks I'm confusing that. But there are loads of main event matches of his from the, you know, 48, 49 at his peak. He's facing nobodies, guys who are just underneath absolute nobodies. The draw is Gorgeous George and Gorgeous George's act and everything to go with it. Yeah. Kellett is kind of the same. I mean, the matches that we have, you know, Mel Stewart and Johnny Kesler, these guys that you're seeing him matching, these are nobodies. These are not, but these are main event matches.
Yeah.
The main event is Les Kellett. That's your main event, really, in that kind of context. So, yeah.
All right. So another special we have that I was able to go out for. Les Kellett's wrestling style, I think we can both agree, has largely gone to the wayside, has pretty much died in the past, 50 years, 40,
multiple
50 years?
Decades, yeah.
Yeah. And there is one person that really goes to not only bat for Les Kellett, but is directly inspired in his wrestling. I did reach out to that person. No offense, Ethan. Originally tried to get them on the show to talk about Les Kellett. I don't think you could blame me. But they weren't able to do it. But they did ask if I wanted to just get some audio from them. So I have audio from Colt Cabana. Obviously, wrestler extraordinaire, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, a fun fact that I always love. And he has some thoughts. I think this is about 7.5 minutes. It's a long clip, but we have some thoughts from Colt Cabana from a wrestler's perspective, which I think is always fun for these conversations. We don't really get that often when it comes to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. So we have a little bit of that perspective from Colt Cabana himself. I'll play that audio now, and then we can discuss it afterwards. And I'll mute both of us here as well.
Hello, Ryan, and listeners to The Ballot. This is professional wrestler and world of sport connoisseur Colt Cabana. And I appreciate you having me on to talk a little bit. Sorry I couldn't join you for the full 3 hours and 50 minutes of this discussion of Les Kellett and whether he deserves to be in the, I guess it would be the Observer Hall of Fame. But I would like to say, first and foremost, Les Kellett is my favorite wrestler of all time. In 2003, I traveled to England. In 2004, I moved to England for the summer for 3 months and wrestled a lot in the British camps and on house shows, including matches and times and in ring and on shows with wrestlers like Robbie Brookside and Johnny Kidd and Steve Gray, Mel Sanders, amongst many others. And it was at that time that I really started to get a huge appreciation for the, I guess, what they would call the world of sport, wrestling style. And at that time, then I got access to the wrestling channel and a fan out there named Paul Robinson, who kind of lent me hundreds of DVDs to be able to start watching the old style and get a real good appreciation for it. And at that time is when I really started to understand that style of wrestling. And then from there, I really got to pick out my favorites, which included wrestlers like Burt Royal and Vic Faulkner. Mick McMichael were some of my favorites, but my two favorites were Cat Weasel and Les Kellett. And if you know anything about me as a wrestler, you know, I've been wrestling for 26 years now. I love comedy within my wrestling. I really do. And Cat Weasel and Les Kellett both really had their own unique style in their own way, and also really justified professional wrestling within their comedy. So it wasn't like they were just out there doing jokes, but their wrestle, you know, their style of wrestling was so humorous and fun, but they always looked like they wanted to win, and they were out there, you know, they were out there to have an exhibition and out there to have fun with their wrestling, but they did want to win their wrestling matches. And I mean, Les Kellett was a master. He was an artist, and I've done stories on Les Kellett, and I've done a lot of studying, and I've asked a lot of people, and I've tried to talk with people, including like really in-depth talks with both Dave Taylor and William Regal. And I'm also a voter for the Observer Awards. I didn't get the invite to vote for, I think, like the last 3 years, but this year I was asked to vote, and I had probably voted for 5 years before that. So sometimes it just shows up in my email. I don't go asking if it doesn't get sent to me, but, my true honesty is, and sometimes I think I go on and off of whether I vote for Big Daddy or not, because that's such a, and I know that could be controversial, but it's, you know, he was such a bad wrestler, but he was so instrumental, and he was a god. He was number one, right? So sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I definitely voted for Johnny Saint. And Rollerball Rocco. Did I vote for Rocco? Actually, I don't know. I definitely voted for Johnny Saint. Maybe out of spite, because his wrestling style is so cool, and so is Les Kellett. But I think ultimately, if you were to ask me, and of course it's all subjective, but I don't think Les Kellett would be a Hall of Famer. And I'm not saying from the people. Like, it would be amazing if Dave went on this giant campaign to start asking for Les Kellett to be in the Hall of Fame, because sometimes when he says it should be, it kind of does. But ultimately, you know, although Les was on the top of the bill some of the time, if not a lot of the time, he was just like a, in my mind, of course I wasn't around back then, and, you know, we only have access to the tapes that we're able to see. But, you know, I take it away as just he was just like a fun part of the wrestling community. He was a fun match that people would get to watch. And it was just like a nice part of the show, like, better than a journeyman. But he was just, to me, he was just a fun part of the show that had a lot of good things. Like, so, he is my Hall of Famer. And that's like the same thing as me going like, well, I believe I'm a Hall of Famer. But the reality is like, I knew my part in wrestling, and I know my part in wrestling is to keep enjoyment in the wrestling show. And, you know, we all wish we could be elevated to champions or whatever it might be. And I believe in my style of wrestling, and I believe Les believed in his style, even though he started that style at, what was it, 59 years old? But I think it just was what it was, and he was just a great, fun wrestler. I don't know if that counts for record-breaking tickets. I don't know if it counts for these unbelievable five-star matches. I just think he was a fun wrestler on the card. So I don't necessarily think he's going to get a Hall of Fame vote from me. Although now that I talk about it, maybe he should. But he definitely is my favorite wrestler of all time. And you know what? And when I was a kid, so was New Jack. And I don't know, you know, New Jack, listen, these guys could wrestle, but New Jack could jump off balconies so high. And for that, he was my favorite wrestler. But I don't know if New Jack's getting a Hall of Fame bid anytime soon either. So Les is the man. He was the greatest. You can go on a podcast series that I did called Pro Wrestling Fringe. It's available wherever you get podcasts. And I kind of do these really fun narrative stories with the help of some writers. And John Lister helped me with the Les Kellett story. And John Lister is a real know-it-all when it comes to that that season. And he wrote a book about the world of sport. And then also he recently put up as many World of Sport matches on YouTube that he could find. And then I actually went back in my old DVDs and found a bunch that he didn't have. So I helped contribute it. I help contribute to that. And so if you go to Pro Wrestling Fringe and you look up, there's only like 16 or 17 of these stories, and they're only, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. But I did one on Les, and I was really proud of it. I actually performed it live at a local comedy show in Chicago years ago. So enjoy making the show. I think it's cool that you're giving him time. I didn't know until you just told me that he was going to be on the ballot. I don't know why. How it decides that he does get on the ballot, but I think that's great. I think he deserves the recognition. I think he's the greatest wrestler of all time. And you know what? I'm allowed to say that because wrestling is art and it's subjective. And Les Kellett was one of the greatest artists of all time.
That is, of course, Colt Cabana with his thoughts on Les Kellett as a Hall of Famer, walking away with a big maybe I get from that thing. Ethan, I watched you the entire time as that audio unfolded. I have a feeling you have a lot to say. Floor is yours. What was your reaction to Colt's thoughts on Les Kellett's case?
I was surprised, considering he's one of Colt's favorite wrestlers, that he underplayed his case, I think, a little bit. So to address the part that has to be addressed, Les Kellett was not just a comedy guy on the card for people to have a little bit of fun with. He was a main event guy. From the late 60s, approximately 1968 to 1975, which is where we get all the footage from as well, he is a top 10 headliner in the UK for 7 years. At his peak, early 70s, I can't remember the exact year, I think it's 71, 72, or 73, somewhere there, he is the number one headliner in the UK. Based on, to explain to listeners, when I say number one headline, I mean he factually main evented more shows over the course of a year than anybody else did, because he was in heavy demand. And so he was not just the mid-card kind of, you know, he was not Cat Weasel. I can't agree with Colt about on Cat Weasel.
You're telling me Cat Weasel's not a Hall of Famer?
No, Cat Weasel would not be a Hall of Famer. So, and that's the thing, when I recommended Les Kellett to be on the ballot, because objectively, if we're talking about who is the most successful comedy wrestler of all time, the answer is Les Kellett. There is nobody in American history who's a pure comedy wrestler that is one of the top headliners in the country. Never mind being the number one headliner. This does not exist in America. It doesn't exist in Japan. It doesn't exist in the Oceania region, Australia, New Zealand, etc. I'm not going to pretend to know everything in terms of Mexico's entire history and the continental Europe. I would be extremely skeptical there is a comedy wrestler who has anywhere near the longevity on top that Kellett has. So drawing, he will score for drawing for the Observer Hall of Fame, which I think Colt will be happy to hear that. you know, he is going to score here. Beyond that, and again, you know, Colt asked about how he got on the ballot and how that was decided. I recommended him because I thought the drawing, the drawing's a mixed bag, but there is something there. As Colt himself said, judging the in-ring of a pro wrestler is completely subjective. Every voter is entitled to think that, you know, whoever is a Hall of Fame level worker, whoever is a terrible worker, you know, even if somebody has an extreme opinion, whether it's, you know, Will Ospreay's an absolutely terrible wrestler, I can't stand watching him, I do not agree with that, but you're entitled to that opinion. You know, you are entitled to feel how you feel. And
seemingly the Young Bucks voting body, or lack thereof, of the best.
Yeah, I mean, the Young Bucks is a great example, because I can say this from experience, you are not going to convince a voter who thinks the Young Bucks are terrible that they're actually great based on Observer Awards and Cage Match and start. They're not going to care. I've seen the matches. I'm going to make my decision. That's not going to work with me, right? So I can understand watching Keller and thinking, and I agree with Colt on this, there is a genius there. There is a real artist there in terms of what he does. And again, the key to his case and why he belongs on the ballot and deserves to be at least discussed is what I just said. There is a very strong argument that this is the greatest comedy wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
So, but beyond that, I mean, everything that he said was pretty much on the, in terms of when the act started, I would strongly suspect 40. So he's probably aged somewhere in his 30s at that time. It started a lot earlier than I think people think. But, you know, I'm nitpicking that. I'm, you know, the rest of what Colt said, I think, is valid.
Yeah. And I think Colt Cabana is also the only guy that you'll ever get comparisons between Les Kellett and New Jack. I think that's the only person alive you'll get those comparisons from. So very much, again, I do want to say, appreciate Colt Cabana for sending that audio. All the respect in the world for him to send that in. Well, there's a lot to unpack there still, so we'll unpack a little bit at a time. You talked about the drawing. You talked about 7 years as the top draw in the UK. You did a lot of research for The Observer. You know, I just went through The Observer newsletter archive and looked up Kellett stuff. Like, you had put in a lot of research in terms of the UK wrestling attendance, and that when you say that he is a top draw for the UK, obviously, records, attendance records, and all these sort of things. But what do you mean when you say that? What do you mean when you say he is a top draw? Is he main eventing every single night? Is he selling out potentially? Maybe if you have any information of that, is he selling out every night? What do you mean when you say that he is a top draw in the UK?
Okay, this is where the discussion is going to get very complicated.
Go for it.
So for the UK market, the way we have two major issues, and this applies to every drawing candidate that you're going to think of post-1950 from the UK. Number one, the business model itself is just simply not conducive to an Observer Hall of Fame voting system. When we talk top draws for the Hall of Fame, we're looking at 10,000 plus attendance figures typically, and how many of those shows did you main event in a typical year, and how does that rank versus everybody else? And then we say you're the number one draw, number two draw, number three draw, et cetera. For the UK, the business model was small shows at high volume. So the 1960s was the boom period. And at its peak, we were talking a dozen shows every day, average attendance around 1,500 people. So these are small shows. These are never going to be shows. Kellett has, in terms of attendance figures, we don't have obviously all the data. He's not going to have anything that is going to be remotely close to warranting a Hall of Fame discussion. However, based on his longevity on top, because there is two aspects to this, right? We're looking at the peak drawing in terms of the figures, but also how long was this guy on top for? What is his overall longevity? And Dave points out on the ballot that longevity is an important consideration. For 7 years, as I said earlier, from roughly 68 to 75.
Consecutive 7 years.
I think there might have been, I can't remember how much he wrestled in like 1973. There might be 1 year gap there.
Okay.
But it's in that sort of period of time.
Yeah.
If you calculate how many shows are being run in the UK, and again, we don't have all the data, but the data I used, I looked at over 9,000 shows. I mean, I used a pretty substantial sample size there.
Oh my God.
And people, if people want to do the counting themselves, by all means, go on wrestlingdata.com. It's all there. Go nuts. It's all there. If you count up all these shows and the main events and who's in the main events, Les Kellett is a top 10 headliner for 7 years. And at his peak, he's the number one headliner. He is main eventing more shows than anybody else. That is a strong indication that he was, in the early 70s, the biggest star in the business. Because in those years, well, basically every era that you can think of outside of the WWE monopoly era, a guy is not going to stay on top for that long unless he's making money. I mean, it's just not, it would be stupid. Unless he's making money or if he has some sort of like a family connection or, you know, something along those lines, which Kellett did not have. So when you look at that, 7 years on top is very, very good. But there are attendance limitations in terms of both the business model and the lack of data. There is also, and I think this is the key problem, his entire peak coincides with a downturn for business. And that's where you're going to run into problems. The downturn, the boom period was in the early 60s, which is coincidental, well, not coincidental, but contributory to the fact that TV was becoming more popular. And then the late 60s, it starts to go down, which is when he starts to become a star. And from 1970, until 1974, we know television ratings are down approximately 10%. Mm-hmm. And that's his peak right there. For the record, I'm not saying it's all on Les Kellett. We don't have enough data to say that.
Of course.
But I'm just saying his stardom coincides with a downturn in business exclusively. The other data that we also have, not just television ratings, but we also have an interesting statistic about wrestling magazine circulation. So wrestling magazines were typically sold before people went to the show. So, you know, the customers would come in, they get the magazines, they go in. There were wrestling magazines dying in the early 70s, around 1772, which is, again, another indicator that, okay, we don't have enough attendance data to show year on year, you know, what's going on with ticket sales. But if you look at the wrestling magazine circulation and how that's going down, you look at television ratings and how that's going down, there's enough evidence there to indicate, okay, things have taken a hit. And obviously the killer blow is wrestling was on television twice a week from 1964, and then that's canceled in 1976 in response to business going down.
Yes.
When you're assessing him as a draw, individually, if you're just looking at him as an individual, you're going to say, hey, you know, this guy's pretty good. Yep. Okay, the numbers aren't high, but he's on top for so long. But then you take into account the business overall, and you're like, okay, I might have to score him a little bit. I'm not saying he shouldn't score. He should score. But there's a limit to how much you're going to score him.
Yeah, 10% is like not a massive number, but it is pretty significant number as well. And obviously, like you said, it's not fully attributed. You can't really fully attribute those things to him. But at the same time, him being at around the top at the very least, it's not great. It's not great. Longevity is definitely there. It's just a matter of, you know, the business kind of dying, not really dying. 10% is not dying. The business decreasing as he's on top is not a great sign for him as a draw. It's a caveat. I still think the 7 years on top is really good, but it's a big caveat.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, the reason for the decline is the reason for most promotions having declines. It was just old guys are on top for too long. This is not, I mean, Kellett peaked at this era. I'm talking the other guys who are already on top.
Yep.
Young stars not being created quick enough. You know, normal, it was just a normal decline. And yeah, it's not the decline that you see in the late 80s, which is much, much more dramatic and serious. Because that decline, I can't remember the number, but I think it's like 40% or something. It's a huge decline where it's just death.
Yeah,
literally. When it comes to wrestling on television, it was death. So this wasn't that bad. But because it resulted in one of the television shows being removed, you can't completely ignore it either. I mean, okay, yes, it was something to note.
Yeah, I only was able to find, I think, two data points for attendance in all my research. I don't know if you know, I'm sure you know the magazine The Wrestler, British magazine at the time in the 60s.
Yes.
I found a lot of things from there, and I have a rabbit hole discussion that I'll talk about in a moment. But I saw two things. One, main event, it seemed like it might have been a semi-main event, possibly, in Albert Hall, where he wrestled McManus. And I got, in the listed, and this is the May 1969 edition of The Wrestler, 6,000 plus in attendance. And I saw another one, I believe is their third bout potentially, had 5,500 in attendance. I don't know if that was Albert Hall, but 5,500 for their third bout. And those were the only like hard numbers that I could find anything regarding Les Kellett.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be very difficult because, like I said, even the shows that don't have the attendance written, sometimes I'll recognize what the arena is or what the hall is. You're not, you know. It wasn't going to fit more than 2,000. Like the area where they wrestled in Croydon, I think, which is loads of wrestling shows happened there. The max capacity is 2,000.
Yeah.
So like again, it's going to be loads of.
It is loads of small almost studio style to a certain degree wrestling.
Yeah, it's basically what you would expect from a high quality indie today, I suspect.
Like Rev Pro kind of to a certain degree.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Like 10,000 plus is very Big Daddy, who's the famous one. He did it once,
yeah.
Right? It wasn't like there was a bunch of these numbers. And even guys like you know, I'm going on a tangent here, but somebody like a Jack Pye, who I think is an automatic no-brainer, but he's a guy who has 10,000 plus numbers without television. in 50s and 60s, that's where you pay attention to him and you look at him and you go, okay, that's very interesting. Keller doesn't, you know, he's not going to have anything like that. Just primarily business model, but also just downturn in business a little bit.
Obviously, I think people have a lot of opinions when it comes to wrestling titles and whether, you know, whether or not you want to look at that in terms of a drawing sort of case. I think especially when it comes to American wrestling. But in terms of England, in terms of British wrestling, he, during this peak, does not have any titles. Is there any sort of correlation at the time, contextually, where titles mean draw? I guess what immediately saying that he didn't have a title and he was somewhat of a draw might showcase that it doesn't have any correlation. But was there any sort of thing where, you know, you put the top draw in the two, the title picture?
In general, you want the champion to be somewhat sort of a draw, because in the UK, it would justify an increase in ticket prices for title matches. So you don't want to put the belt on somebody who's not a draw at all. That would be a stupid move. But in terms of Keller, I've always said that titles are props. Okay, they're not real. And a lot of the time, the wrestler makes the title. The most famous example of that being Luthers, who made the NWA title mean what it really means.
Yep.
And in terms of Kellett, considering what kind of a wrestler he was, I don't know why you would belt him. He doesn't need it, obviously. He was doing just fine without one. What would be... The fans are not there to watch whether he's going to still be the champion. Again, the results... He won most of his matches, but it's DQ. Like, it's about the act. It's about being entertained. And we have very famous examples of this. You know, Antonino Rocca, who... I'm thinking a little bit here before I say this. I think he's the greatest draw of the 1950s. I think so. Very underrated now, but I think he is. Didn't need a title. Win-loss record did matter for him. Did not need a belt. Didn't matter. You could put him up against Luthers, who's drawing as the NWA champion. You look at Rocca, he's beating Luthers, even though Luthers is the champion. It doesn't matter, right? So it depends on the wrestler. But I can see why. I mean, Colt mentioned this briefly, that because Kellett wasn't a champion, and you know, you're led to presume, oh, maybe he wasn't that big of a star. No, that's not accurate. He didn't need the title. I don't think that really impacts his Hall of Fame conversation at all. At least I don't think it should.
Yeah, and I fully agree to that point. The act doesn't need it. The act is a comedy act. It is the act is people wanting to see this guy make his funny wrestling jokes. It could do something interesting, I guess, if he had a title, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to do anything like in terms of significance for a drawing or anything. It would be weird, but it, you know, that would be what it is. I guess in terms of that title conversation, just for context, British Light Heavyweight Championship, he won once in the 50s, I believe, 51, 52.
Yeah,
is when he won it. I did go down a rabbit hole on the Wrestler magazine article stuff. I'm very unclear about the dates for this, but there was something in regards to early on in his career, him winning the British Cruiserweight Championship and then losing it. The quote here is early on in Les Kellett's life as a wrestler, he held a British title for 5 years. This was the British Cruiserweight Championship, a title which disappeared from the wrestling scene some years ago. Why did it disappear? In another article in December 1966, it said, he lost it on, quote, the reorganization of the Lord Mount Evans Championship weight divisions, which, as far as I can tell, those rules changes were in 47.
Yeah.
So I don't know what any of that is, but I'm just bringing it up because I went down a rabbit hole 4 hours ago about all of this, and it really confused me, especially in regards to World War II and whatever Kellett's doing. But I'm just bringing it up because I have to bring it up and get it off my chest.
Do we know, do we know what the date of that quote is, roughly, the year, for example?
It was first written in 1966, December of 1966. And this was, 1966 is when he won a Golden Cloak Award, which is I assume some sort of award for outstanding person or whatever in Britain. I don't know what that is. I don't think it exists anymore.
The newspaper articles that I've seen that reference him in 1940 do not mention a cruiserweight title. They don't mention it in 1944 either. But the claim is that he was a champion for 5 years.
Here, I'll put it in the private chat just so you can Oh, that's the StreamYard link. Whoops, wrong link. I'll put it in the private chat just so you get the
I mean, I'm not saying it's not true.
Oh yeah, the dates are the thing that make me confused, because 5 years. Let's say the rule changes are in 47, right? 5 years, that'd be 42. That would be during World War II, right up until 45. Presumably, Kellett's a part of World War II. So again, this is a massive rabbit hole they went down. I don't know what it is. I don't know how true it is. The fact that it was written in 66 is interesting, but this is would be super early in his career. And if that is the case, it also could just be that like he's champion for 5 years, Ethan, because there was no wrestling because World War II was happening, right?
It could also be the case that he's the champion for 5 years because he may not have been the champion for 5 years, but not everything was documented.
That's also very true. A thing we have not
a common issue, I might add, in the UK title lineage stuff.
I would say a common issue in that, but also like as far as I can tell, a potential issue in regards to like Les Kellett's own history. We have not really discussed the man Les Kellett behind the scenes. There is a lot. There's a lot to talk about. If you want to talk about that, that's a very CM Punk conversation we don't have to go into. But
I mean.
But this thing of it, there were constant sort of stories that I found of Les Kellett potentially mythologizing or making up his own sort of stories while also being humble about things. So there are those aspects as well. If he's telling his own story, he could have been world champion during World War II, and who the heck knows?
Yes. Kellett was very vague about his own history because he didn't want everyone to know how old he was, predominantly. Because once people figure out how old you are, how long you've been around, there are going to be promoters looking at you like, your time's gone. It's time. You know, he protecting his own position. And look, on a personal level, again, even the stuff about him serving in World War II and stuff is very questionable in terms of what he was doing there. And did he actually participate, or did he try to get out of it? And, you know, there's huge question marks about all of that, his personal history. In terms of being the Cruiserweight champion for 5 years, it might be true.
It could be like a COVID thing where like people just, there's no wrestling events and he's just has this super long reign, you know?
Yeah. It might be true. My bet would still be the magazine's incorrect, just because how much did they know about what was going on in the early 40s in a magazine in the like 60s, and what's the documentation for? It's going to be very difficult to document this kind of stuff. But even if it is, I don't, in terms of a Hall of Fame conversation, I don't think it would really matter either way, because Kellett pre-late 60s is not in a Hall of Fame conversation for anything, really. Okay. I mean, you could say he's a very good wrestler, but like the historical significance wouldn't be there because the success wouldn't be there, the drawing wouldn't be, you know, he wouldn't be in this conversation. The conversation starts late 60s through to mid 70s. That's where you've got a lot to talk about, in my opinion.
Yeah, I found two different articles, and I put them both in the links for you to see. I guess I'll put them in the link dump as well in this episode. So I'm sure you'll go through some sort of rabbit hole as well at some point about this as well. Let's talk about historical significance, because I think it's very interesting, because whereas I think it's fair to say that I don't necessarily see Les Kellett as a major historical significance, mainly because that British comedy style largely doesn't exist anymore. I guess there's historical significance in terms of him being one of the best comedy wrestlers ever, right? You know, in terms of the canon of professional wrestling, you know, he is one of the best comedy wrestlers ever, yada, yada, yada. The fact that it lives on in some people like Colt Cabana, Nigel McGuinness, I think you can even say like Orange Cassidy to a certain degree. I was going to make an argument for Samoa Joe, and then he recently did a podcast interview where he said the nope spot is not any sort of anything like that. But I was like, it feels Kellett coded.
John Moxley, when he does the bounce wacky, off the ropes, yeah, come up, clothesline, has he ever talked about where he got that from?
Kyle O'Reilly as well, I believe. I don't think he has publicly. I couldn't find anything.
So that's for the listeners unaware, that is a Kellett spot, but Kellett used to do it with a headbutt. Yes. Come off the ropes, little bounce, boom, headbutt. But I don't know. Again, this is all speculative. I don't know if there's any sort of influence there.
Yeah. Same thing. I also found that Ninja Mac is largely inspired by Les Kellett, and that blew my mind because I was like, what? Excuse me? in terms of historical significance, I think it is largely a question of kind of what we've been alluding to all episode, kind of the big conversation point regarding Les Kellett is the viewpoint of comedy wrestling, right? You know, it is a subjectivity within the subjectivity of professional, of whether or not you like professional wrestling, is whether or not you like comedy wrestling. You know, the question of should a wrestling Hall of Fame include arguably the best comedy wrestler of time, versus the conversation as well of is comedy wrestling a wrestling, a Hall of Fame style, level style? What are your thoughts about historical significance in regards to Les Kellett and comedy wrestling, I guess, as a whole in terms of the Hall of Fame?
I mean, before we tackle the comedy wrestling aspect, which is the majority of what this is going to be,
sure.
The other aspect of his historical significance would be, as a headliner, if you look at the history of the UK, he is top 20 all time in terms of one of the absolute top headliners in the UK's history, post like mid-40s, I should say. Mm-hmm. He was honored on the final television show on 1988 when they were going off the air. He was one of the wrestlers selected to be focused on and honored, which again showcases how big of a star he was. The the little influence tidbits that, as you yourself have already mentioned, are there. But the big one is, objectively, he is the most successful comedy wrestler of all time. Again, the listeners, if anyone could think of a comedy wrestler anywhere who was the number one headliner in a country for a year and top 10 for 7 years, by all means, correct me, I might be wrong. I doubt it, but I might be wrong. That
just for the fun conversation, who do you think would be a number two?
I mean, the example, but it's not even close, because you've got people like Brazo de Plata in Mexico, who is a pure comedy guy, but he's in mid-cards. Like, he's not going to be one of the top 10 headliners individually. In the U.S.,
I don't know.
Like, top 10, if you look at Dave's, because I did this last week when I knew we were going to do this show. If you look at the 2009 Dave's announcement of the top 10 draws in the business, there's no comedy wrestlers there, ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but that doesn't mean, again, you're going to have to look at, okay, maybe there wasn't a comedy wrestler who was one of the top draws in the business. Is there a comedy wrestler in a smaller territory who was main eventing all the time? That's what you're kind of going to have to dig into. I have no idea who you're even going to be able to. In my opinion, America, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, you're doomed. You're not going to find a comparison next to Kellett. Continental Europe, I don't know. But again, his nickname was the Clown Prince of Europe, and he didn't give himself that nickname. So,
yeah,
you know.
Japan would probably be the closest. Someone in Japan, like DDT, something like that. I mean, even then, DDT would do a lot of their quote-unquote serious wrestlers as the main eventers.
I was going to say, yeah, it's going to be very difficult to find anything. And that's, again, that's what makes him such an interesting candidate. And that's essentially why he is on the ballot. If he's objectively the most successful comedy wrestler of all time, and therefore strong argument that he's the best period comedy wrestler of all time, he deserves to be discussed. How much positive historical significance are you going to attribute to that? Depends on your view on comedy and pro wrestling. I mean, you're going to get extreme answers here.
Yeah.
The Puritan fan who wants real wrestling, who's a, you know, who loves the peak of New Japan in the 2010s and loves, you know, the Misawa Kawada stuff and, you know, real wrestling, competitive sport imitation, if you will, they're going to hate this shit. They're not going to like this at all. They're going to think it's embarrassing. But if you are like Colt Cabana and you can see the art in it, and comedy is an art, like, let's be clear, you know, the greatest stand-up comedians, you can't just put anyone up there and they're going to be able to do the same thing. There is an art to what is done. They're going to think he's like a no-brain Hall of Famer if he's the greatest comedy wrestler of all time. For me, and I'm going to sound like Dave on Twitter here.
Hold on, let me change my profile to an egg or something.
Because the thing that I think I would have said his historical significance is very, very good. 3.5 stars, if you will. But but the problem is he was the most successful comedy wrestler of all time during a period where business went down.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is a limit to how well you can argue that the act worked, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not just about artistic evaluation when it comes to the historical significance category, especially if business is going down. You do have to take that into account.
it's the conversation of diminishing returns, just like with any wrestling or comedy. He's telling the joke over and over and over again, crowds are still going to see it, but it's diminishing returns.
Yes. I mean, the modern example, if you look at like Timeless Tony Storm, okay?
Perfect example. There we go. Perfect.
Is anyone seriously going to bet money that Timeless Tony Storm is still going to be one of the biggest AEW stars in 7 years' time? If you do, you should win a lot of money with that bet, because that I doubt it. I there is a limit, I think, to be fair, her gimmick is evolving. But like, if you keep it the way it was last year, there is a serious limitation to how far you can go with it. Gorgeous George was the biggest draw in the business. He's done after about 3 years, you know, in most areas, I should say, not everywhere, but most areas. Because again, once you've seen it, you've seen it, you know, and it's extraordinary that Les Kellett was on top for 7 years. It took that long for people to get bored of it. But, you know, I used to argue people would get bored of Big Daddy quickly. And, you know, he was on top for well over a decade. So, you know, the British fans are very patient and they're willing to laugh at the same jokes very, very often. You know, I don't know what to say about it. So
it's a good joke. They're good jokes.
Yeah, it's a good joke. I'll laugh at it. Yes. So historical significance, I think.
I think it's good.
Yes. Yes. But I think it's good. But again, is it Hall of Fame level? No. Is it sort of great or four stars and, you know, that kind of level? No. Is it good? Yes, it's good. I do think it's positive. I don't think it's negative. I think it's absurd to argue the greatest comedy or wrestler of all time is a negative. I think that's just silly.
Yeah.
But you'll notice as we're making this discussion, we're talking about his drawing, his in-ring and his historical significance. We're saying, you know, in-ring, very good.
Yeah.
Historical significance is good. Drawing is good. You know that he's the Hall of Very Good. Like, that is essentially what I'm leading people here. Like, he is a candidate that I would look at and say, he's absolutely ballot worthy. He deserves to be here. He deserves to be discussed. Should you really be voting for him? No. Not in my opinion, the answer to that is no. And you know, if you talk about the rest of the world section as a whole, it's an even harder no at that point, because the competition there is just absolutely brutal.
I think also the big conversation in terms of comedy is the idea that the comedy style in wrestling, I think to me there are two different versions of it. Obviously, there's more versions of it, but there's one big version of it, and that's the American wrestling style, which is these very broad, very over the top, very Vince McMahon loves fart jokes and people doing weird, really weird things. And his brand of humor, for what it is. And you know, you have this like period of time, and I will put my entire life savings that Vince McMahon never watched a single second of Les Kellett.
Safe bet.
Yeah. There's this period of time where, you know, Les Kellett retires, stops wrestling. And then you have 20 to 30 years till like you start getting more of those through like guys like Colt Cabana, you know, partly like Nigel McGuinness, like I said, Kyle O'Reilly, you know, where you start getting that British style of comedy back, right? And that's also during the 80s and 90s when American wrestling has its biggest boom, you know, I guess to date, or maybe not to date anymore, but that's a conversation for another day. So this idea to me is like, British wrestling's comedy style to me basically lives and dies through Les Kellett. When he retires, that style kind of dies with him. In a lot of ways, obviously it lives on in Colt Cabana, but you know, Colt Cabana is not a top draw. No offense to Colt Cabana, but he's not a top draw. I think we'd admit not a top draw for seven consecutive years. And the American style just grew and grew so much so that like, I think, you know, if you look at other countries, if you look at England, they will do something more Americanized in comedy, more broad, than they would do this sort of catch-as-catch-can British comedy-based style. And so then it brings up the question to me of, like, no one ever does it ever again, basically. Other than Colt Cabana, no one really does it ever again. And this, not really, I guess, to his wrestling ability or even to maybe his historical significance, I don't know what it would be, but, like, it says something that like he's the best comedy wrestler ever of all time. You would watch and be like, that is great. And then most people would be like, but I'm not going to do that. And it that says something. And it sucks. I want to make it clear, Ethan. It sucks. Because I think Les Kellett is great and fun to watch. But so many people look at that and be like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to do my own thing. That's a fun GIF to watch online.
But I think it's also a testament to how difficult it is to replicate him, I think. Because it's That's not fair. Like in the UK in the mid-70s, everybody else was successfully doing what there's like this is, you know, ties to the point we made about there is art to what he's like, there is a level of skill involved, which is why nobody else, even in the world of sport era, was able to do it anywhere near, you know, his level and anywhere near as successfully. But I think the influence argument is difficult to me because last year we inducted Johnny Saint's influence on America is indie level, basically. Yet a lot of voters thought that was good enough to get him inducted into the Observer Hall of Fame. And being pushed on it, Kellett versus Saint, I'm taking Les Kellett. So Kellett is a factually better draw. Mm-hmm. I would take Saint as a wrestler because you can clearly just do more with Saint. He's a great worker. I mean, you could argue even he's a Hall of Fame tier worker. You can do so much more with him. But historical significance, I would take Kellett there as well. And he's a slightly stronger candidate to Johnny Saint. And again, this is going to be up to the voters. Look, I didn't attribute strong historical significance or specifically influence, which is what we're talking about here, to Johnny Saint.
Yeah.
There might be voters who do that for Kellett like they did for Saint. So again, that's it's going to be up to the voters to decide. But for me, I just don't know what you would say. Like, again, if you love comedy wrestling, you're going to think this guy's a no-brainer. Yeah. You just don't. I mean, you're going to say it. Work Hall of Fame level, historical significance Hall of Fame level. You know, he should be in. I mean, that's what this case is. If you greatly value comedy, you're not going to worry about whether it lasted or if there's. You're going to say no. This guy should be in. If you're a moderate, which I'd like to think I am, you know, you're going to say Hall of very good. Like he's, you know, he deserves to be in the conversation, but he shouldn't really be getting votes. And then you've got the extremist, or, you know, the other extreme, essentially the Puritan view, who are going to hate him. When I think historical significance to me is basically synonymous with importance. If I'm writing a book about pro wrestling in the UK, for example, would I mention Les Kellett? Yes. Yes, I would mention Les Kellett.
I brought this up last episode. I talked about the canon. If you're talking about the canon of pro wrestling.
Yes. It frustrates me a little bit. Because there are a lot of voters who think significance and influence mean the same thing. They don't. They do not. You can be incredibly important and have very little influence. Yeah. Most because people just can't replicate you. Like that's fine. But are you important?
Les Kellett is probably that guy.
Yeah, like it can't be replicated. I don't advise any wrestler coming up to try and replicate this. It could go very, very badly for your career. But like there is value. If you're talking about wrestling as a point of study, like there is a situation, especially if you're talking about the styles, where you would have to talk about him extensively in that situation, right? So he does have positive historical significance, but like I said, he's not some overwhelming no-brainer that, oh my God, we have to mention the great Les Kellett. It's a couple of tiers below that.
In terms of like genre of wrestling, you know, I think there's other comparisons you can make, right? You're talking about the best ever in the genre of comedy wrestling. There are other genres of wrestling, tag team wrestling, for example, deathmatch wrestling, for example. Another person on the ballot in the Mexico region, one of the best minis of all time, Masquerita Sangrada, right? You know, in terms of genre, I think that's very interesting. I think like, you know, a guy like Onita is like arguably one of the best deathmatch wrestlers of all time, right? And he's in the Hall of Fame. I believe he was a 96 guy.
96.
And to that extent, then there's an argument for Les Kellett, whereas like, you know, Dave putting Onita in a 96, and granted there's other things about it, but being one of the best guys at deathmatch, at least at the time in 96, you know, that's saying that like, okay, then maybe the genre, the one of the best people in the genre of wrestling deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. So if you want to give a pro argument to Les Kellett being the best of his genre, maybe that's enough to sway voters.
It's an interesting Masquerita Sagrada is a very interesting comparison, because with Sagrada, great worker, don't get me wrong, a really, really a great wrestler. But the problem I've always had with Masquerita Sagrada is that we just don't have enough historical context to be able to make any claims about how you know, in terms of the history of the minis, how great he would be. And I've said this openly, if somebody did like a deep dive and could find that on objective metrics, main eventing, etc., he is the most successful mini. I'm hoping Rob Viper is listening to this. That would help his case tremendously. Okay, that would be a huge boost to his case. And the death match comparison is also apt, because that's another style of wrestling that a lot of wrestling fans have absolutely no time for, and they think it's garbage. And
if you fall on a bat of spikes, then a bunch of ECW people will be upset.
Random things exploding and blah blah blah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who absolutely Jim Cornette absolutely fucking hates that style, and I understand. I get it. Right. So it's one of those where, again, if you're viewing wrestling as an art medium, Kellett, I don't know how you wouldn't rate Kellett very highly for significance if you're doing the same thing for other styles of wrestlers. So if you're rating the best technical, the best high flying might be the most interesting one, because a lot of guys were inducted on that based on how innovative and influential they were from the 80s. But again, there's an influence argument there, right? It's not just growing the style, the artistic style of high flying wrestling, it's influencing the next generation who do it better than you, and then the next generation, and it has this sort of continuous cycle, which comes with, as you mentioned, Kellett really doesn't have that in terms of comedy. It's so limited. He's one of those guys that I can see a voter looking at him and thinking he's a Hall of Famer. Like I can see where you would get that impression. But I can also see the other side, and it just heavily. His case leans heavily to the subjective. I would be amazed, and this is another thing I think we need to discuss. Historically, gimmick wrestlers on the Observer Hall of Fame do terribly. I mean, the easy example would be your sort of stereotypical, you know, your Kenji Shibuyas and these stereotypical gimmicks that were, you know, very, very successful, but because of what they are, the voters will hold their noses up at that and go, that's aged terribly. Yeah. And they'll just, it won't matter. So with him, I think he's in for a rough ride for a lot of reasons, but I can see it. You know, I don't think I was listening to a show with Bix, and I'm trying to remember the other names. Alan Blackstock was on that show. Tony,
a round table conversation with a bunch of UK historians. Between the Sheets.
Yes, which I was supposed to do, but things happen. And they didn't. Some of those voters didn't really understand why he was on the ballot. And to me, it's pretty obvious why he would be on a ballot. Mm-hmm. But again, ballot worthy, vote worthy, Hall of Fame worthy. These are different levels. You know, in my mind, I keep using the star rating analogy because I think it's easier for people to understand,
especially Wrestling Observer listeners.
Yeah, I tried to use tiers, and people were asking me questions about. I was like, okay, star ratings is easier.
Star rating, something everyone can agree on.
Yes, star ratings.
That famously never a thing that it gets questioned or argued about.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, some of it is subjective, right?
Sure.
Like, to me, like, ballot worthy means 3 stars. You're a good candidate, you deserve to be on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Vote worthy is 4 stars. You're a great candidate, but it depends on how many votes I have, who's competing against you. 5 stars and above is like, you should be in. Like, that's where there is no conversation. Mm-hmm. Kellett, to me, is a 3¾-star candidate. He's really good. It's just not quite there. But if voters disagree, and again, I'm going to bring the inner Dave out of me here. If you think he's half a star stronger than I do, that's fine, right? Yeah. That's not, I'm not going to start. If you think that's absolutely fine. He's close enough where it's like, okay, you know, I can, okay, you know, that's fine. So yeah,
I'm very interested in the sort of I guess the potential meta conversation in terms of the voters, right? You know, when you have I know I'm gonna pull a potential live grenade here, but when you have a guy like Big Daddy on the ballot getting a lot of votes but not enough for 15 years, then switch over to like a guy like Johnny Saint another, I think, like big name to like American readers and listeners. And now that Johnny Cinco's in, I wonder if there is this sort of meta thing to American people of looking to see a name that I recognize, right? You know, you have guys like, I think Les Kellett would be a name that people recognize. I think Adrian Street, it would be a name that people recognize. You know, that sort of thing of where is that sort of eye of Sauron going to start looking, you know? And I truly wonder, especially after Johnny Cinco going straight in, especially with, you know, Arion having 15 years and who is it? DiNucci and somebody else is at 14.
Dominic DiNucci and Billy Joyce will be 15 next year. They're both on 14 this year, yes.
With those three people all basically on the cutting floor very quickly, I'm very interested to see, especially, you know, like active, I think it was like active professionals had Johnny Cena at number two of their voters. I think it was Hit Reporters at number one. I'm interested to see where all those votes wind up going.
I mean, it's I'm not as afraid of the live grenade as you are, because I don't really care what people think about my opinions.
I know, but I also know it's a touchy subject for a lot of people, not just you, but a lot of people.
We factually have a lot of ignorance in the rest of the world section, and I can say factually because Davis said it on Observer Radio. You know, I don't know what else to say about it. There is an issue of particularly American reporters, I believe, who chime into this section, and as you say, they pick the names they kind of recognize. And that's just who they're going to vote for. And they don't really care about the other ones. They're not going to research it. I haven't heard of him. He must be a nobody. I don't care.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, looking at that section this year, that section is incredibly competitive. If you talk to the knowledgeable voters, Jose Torres should be in. I mean, you know, he's one of the greatest draws ever in Europe's history. He absolutely should be in. But there are voters who simply don't know who he is. Even though there's a piece in the newsletter written about him. So I don't really know what else we're supposed to do there, but they don't know who he is. So he's gonna take long. I still think he gets in eventually, but it's going to take a while. Gordenko, we will see. He's a bit more known because he did wrestle in Canada and Japan. So there is some sort of name recognition there. And then the guys you mentioned, we have Billy Joyce, Dominic DiNucci, both going to be hit year 15 next year. And Arion got 49%, I believe, last year, and needs 50 this year.
46 last year.
46, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be fine. I mean, he'll survive. I think he gets in because he had the Bruno feud, so the voters are somewhat aware of who he is. I think he'll get in. But with four votes, we are running into a problem in terms of art, because I think, you know, Arion, DiNucci, Joyce, more than all of them, really should these guys deserve to get in. But because of the time limitations that we've now run into, I don't know if all of those. I would bet money one of them at least is not gonna make it, because of, you know, every section has ignorance. It's really not as bad here as it is some of the stuff that I see in U.S. historical, mm-hmm. but like it is there, and the Big Daddy thing. the lesson there is getting in based on a drawing. Predominantly drawing case from the UK is going to be very difficult.
Yeah.
Big Daddy, Jackie Parlo, Kendo Nagasaki, all eliminated. For those who wish to learn, there is a lesson there. Johnny Saint gets in with very little, nothing in terms of drawing. Mark Rocco gets in, who does, you know, was on top for actually longer than people think. I mean, he was a main event guy, but the case is predominantly in ring, right? So you start learning here in terms of who do you think stands a chance and who do you think is going to struggle. And one of the reasons I recommend is somebody like Steve Gray, not just because I think he's a Hall of Fame tier worker from 1975 to 1985, but it's an in-ring case. It's a predominantly in-ring case. The voters can watch and go, oh, I see, right? Yeah. I understand why he's there. I can see why, you know, why we should consider him. The drawing cases from the UK to me are doomed. Jack Pye is a very weird exception, but even that requires a lot of education. The British historians will all vote for Jack Pye. I can say that with certainty, but that requires a lot of education. Everybody else, I recommended Mike Marino, who was on top for freaking two decades as one of the top 10 headliners. He got dropped off straight away. Like, drawing from the UK, the voters, I think, do understand the drawing limitations in terms of the attendance stuff we spoke about earlier. And as a result, that's like, if that's the main thing going for this UK candidate, how strong are they really? And that hurts a lot of them, I think.
And sadly, as we laid out already in this podcast episode, what was Les Kellett's one of his stronger cases? It's his drawing. So that's going to be the conversation, I guess. I end all these episodes with the same question. I put in the private chat, but I'm sure you already know it off the top of your head who you're thinking of. But for the rest of the world region, and you can have some conversation about other regions if you like, but for the rest of the world region at the very least, you get four votes. Who are you currently thinking for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame in that region?
For me, it's going to be Jose Torres, who I consider to be the strongest wrestling candidate, arguably on the entire ballot, to be honest. So he'll be my number one. George Gordienko is going to be my number two.
I love Gordienko.
Billy Joyce is going to be my number three. And Arian, because of that 15-year time limit where it's make or break, he's my number four. I feel bad for Gilbert the Duke. Poor Gilbert the Duke.
I haven't done my episode on Gilbert the Duke yet, but so this will be a nice primer.
Because I recommended all of these names to Dave, and fortunately he took all of them for me, because we needed to open up another voting slot, because this is the only section on the entire ballot that there were more people I wanted to vote for than I was allowed to vote for. And I thought, okay, well, the only way we're going to open up another voting slot is by adding candidates, right? So I recommended Kellett, I recommended Steve Gray, I recommended Gilbert LeDuc, I recommended Ted Boyd Marino, who I also feel bad for, because I think he's also doomed, I'm afraid, here. Just to open up that voting slot, of those four newer candidates, Gilbert LeDuc's really strong. He's really, really strong. But, you know, we're faced with this situation of not just prioritizing votes based on merit, but just timeline limitations. And with that scenario, the likes of Arian and DiNucci in particular are going to have to just be, you know, aggressively pushed to try and just get them in and free up. And make sure they don't get eliminated in the future. So, yeah, I mean, that's my four. After those four, I mean, I have the entire ranking system except for the new guys. You know, I have DiNucci at five. I have the Royal Brothers at six. I have Les Kellett. Now that I've covered his case, he's currently in seventh, but he will be eclipsed by Gilbert LeDuc once I'm done with him. Mm-hmm. So he'll fall to eight. And then you've got guys like Otto Vaughns. Some voters are going to get annoyed at me. The only candidate I have on this entire section who, in my opinion, would not even make the ballot is Adrian Street. So I would recommend to the large number of American media voters to dig a little bit deeper, because that's not it, man. There's really not a lot there to be voting for him just because you heard of him wrestling in Continental or something. You know, that's really not good enough, I don't think.
And that's also what's very interesting is, like, you know, you're sort of talking about how, like, at least when it comes to the rest of the world region, like, the drawing case isn't really a thing. And I'm not too familiar enough for the rest of the world to really talk about Adrian Street. But this idea of, like, you know, voters coming in, like parachuting in almost to the rest of the world region and seeing a name, that's where I feel like with Adrian Street, Les Kellett, obviously, also to a certain degree. I think Otto Vaughns probably has a little bit as well. I mean, just in terms of a name that people know. That's the sort of thing of, like, I feel like those types of people will get more eyes on them because, yes, I saw them wrestle. I know I've heard wrestlers talk about them. I know their connections to Hall of Famers or whatever. And other people like, you know, Torres, who got a 9% year-over-year growth when all the, you know, all the voters then instead went to Arian, which is good, but also Johnny Saint. I fear that those are the sort of people that will get more love on the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And again, look, to be clear, even the guys that you haven't heard of, I mean, you just mentioned Torres's growth and George Kidd, who most people wouldn't have had a clue who he is. He got in eventually. And, you know, is it going to take longer than it should? Yes. But that applies to, you know, non-wrestler. You can see that happening now. Like, these guys are going to, the obvious ones will get in, but it's just going to take a little bit longer because democracy has its flaws, right? I mean, what can I say?
There's a joke here currently that I'm not going to make.
I'm not going to make that either. So, you know, democracy has its flaws. So But it's important to... Adrian Street concerned me because of the growth in his support last year. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, so the Big Daddy voters have moved into that, I'm presuming, because I don't know where that's coming from. And Dave, on his yearly, when he talks about who the reporters voted for, who the historians voted for, wrestlers, non-wrestlers, and you can see Adrian Street scored very highly with the reporters. And I thought, okay, yeah, that's... again, I would encourage digging deeper because, look, Adrian Street's case, to be very brief about it, there is no drawing case. He was a headliner as a tag team guy for a couple of years in the early 70s, a bad period for wrestling, and he was a tag team guy predominantly, and that is it. As a worker, he was actually good in his younger days, but I don't know how you're watching him in like Continental or something and thinking he's some sort of a Hall of Fame worker. So, I mean, we just talked about Kellett. Yeah. Kellett's a much better worker overall than Street was. Historical significance is going to be a mixed bag. I mean, it just depends on how you view the evolution of the Exotico gimmick. But, like, there's no way there's enough there to say, oh, yeah, Adrian Street's a, you know, I don't know. That one just is bemusing to me.
Yeah, I think Adrian Street, third for reporters, ninth for retired pros, 12th for active pros, tied with, I believe, the Royal Brothers there as well for active professionals. Not ranked for historians. So historians, apparently they know what's up.
Historians always know what's up. Historians are good.
Thank you so much, Ethan, for coming onto the show. Are there any last closing thoughts you have about Les Kellett? And of course, I guess in the classic podcast fashion, if you have any plugs, feel free to give them as well.
I don't have any plugs. For Les Kellett, I think, I would encourage all the listeners to at least watch one of his matches. So you, just to get an idea of when we keep talking about he was such a great comedy wrestler, so you know really what we're talking about.
In the difference in comedy wrestling, because it is something that it is not around anymore, really.
Yeah, he's a very uniquely successful, I mean, unique in general, but also uniquely successful comedy wrestler. And no matter how much me and Ryan talk about it, we're not going to be able to, your eyes will tell the story a lot better than your ears, I guess, in the situation. So do give him a chance in terms of just watching for, looking at him and understanding, oh, I see why he's in this conversation.
Yeah. I think to just speak on that, I think that's a thing for everybody. You know, that was the big talking point I had on the first episode, talking about Ted Boy Marino, of that's just a guy that there's no footage. Well, there really is no footage of Ted Boy Marino kind of wrestling in a real wrestling match per se. But that's like a guy that's like, you just need to like look up who that is, because no one knows who Ted Boy Marino is. And you just need to like find, you just need to do the research, people. That's the end of the day conversation here, is do the freaking research. Don't just rely on dumb idiots on a podcast who also do the research. One way more and way longer than the other. But again, Ethan, thank you very much for coming on to the show. It was very much a pleasure having you on. I very much enjoyed listening to you speak on this. That is it for this week's episode, this month's episode of The Ballot. We will be back next month talking about the case for another wrestler. Until then, have a good day, everybody.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Hello, my name is Jessica and I'm the host of Jumpy Knee Pod, a modern day All Japan podcast. Join me and a guest each month as we cover all that went down in the ring, outside of the ring, and everywhere else. Big title matches, tournaments, character arcs, storytelling, feuds, and more. It's all covered on Jumpy Knee Pod. Look out for a bonus episode every once in a while, covering a variety of All Japan topics. So make sure you tune into Jumpy Knee Pod. It's a new All Japan podcast for a new All Japan era.